You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of February 14th, 2018. And grab your sweetie, it's Valentine's Day.
Whoa.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And tis the season of WoW.
Aww.
WoW. Yes, this podcast comes out on February 14th. So keeping in the theme of Valentine's Day, we're going to talk a little bit about popular cooperative games, maybe some games that actually have a little bit to do with love, and I would say some games that will put love in danger.
That's exactly right. We're inspired this week by an article from Polygon that lists Emily Heller's the best couch co-op games to play with your Valentine. I'm excited to talk about this for a couple of reasons. One, I think most of the games on this list are actually not great Valentine's Day games. Specifically to play with the lover. And then I would also say, I actually don't think very many games are great for couples, period.
Mm.
Even like dedicated co-op games.
Do we need to define, so when we say couples, because I would say that our relationship has been strengthened immeasurably by co-op Spelunky.
Yes, that's true. That's
but
true.
We do not share a bed.
That's exactly right. That's not yet, but yes, that's true.
Save for our bunk beds.
Yeah, save for our bunk beds. I think the difference here, though, right, is you and I have played multiple like games of Spelunky over many, many hours, such that I feel like that itself is building a relationship, you know what I mean? Like, the first game of Spunky, the first time you murdered me by, like, needlessly throwing me into, like, an arrow gun or something, maybe not the best, you know, first date experience, if you
yeah,
will.
Yeah, but it's our crucible is what you're saying. It was forged through...
That's true.
Through kind of adversity, and we came out stronger.
That's a good point, because there are some games that if you can get through that with your partner of choice, you can get through anything.
Oh man, should we start with the article and then, because I want to add some more things in there. Actually, Hannah was recently making a joke about a certain game that she said, quote, almost made us get a divorce. I contend this, but that was what
gosh.
She said.
I'm curious to know what game that is.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get into it. So the first game that they list on this article is Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time.
Yes.
What do you think about this as a Valentine's Day game? What makes a good Valentine's Day game to begin with?
It's pink, obviously.
Clearly. Okay, Lovers in a Space-Time, check.
It has it kind of has a chalky residue, like those hearts that you buy.
Yeah. So my controller.
Yeah, my N64 controller is covered in white powder, just like those candy hearts.
Yep.
I think that this game represents kind of a subgenre of games that include things like Overcooked.
Yes, Overcooked is also on the list.
Yeah, and it's the same. It's a similar type of game of there are X number of people and there are X plus one jobs.
Yes,
like that's the whole like genre of like space team and all of those things. Like you have to do some things and you have just too few people to do them all simultaneously, and therein lies the challenge of the game.
I think that this genre is completely inappropriate for playing as a couple.
I mean, it inherently is about man. Well, I guess it just depends on what you're looking for. But I would say this is an inherently stressful game because the whole point of the game is that you're under-resourced.
Yes, 100%. And not just that, right? This is a game, these types of games, Overcooked and Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time, which both, I will add, sort of mirror a workplace environment, in my mind, are like shitty job simulators. You know?
Shitty
like,
job simulator. You play like, job simulator, now play shitty job simulator.
Let's think back to college, right? You have a group project, and someone is not doing their fucking job, right? Like, because here's the thing, right? In any game like this, or any time you're working as a team, you have certain expectations about what your colleagues can do. And when they don't meet those expectations, you will find them wanting. And it's especially frustrating when you feel like you're doing your part of the job. Why are they, for God's sakes, not doing theirs? Get to the helm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it just depends on what you're looking for. Like, and also,
who's looking for that for like a couples game?
Well, I mean, I guess there are those couples out there that's like, oh, all right, do you have a great time? We go rock climbing or something. And I'm like, oh, that sounds like you have to go outside. You know, like people have weird decisions and
that's
choices.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Yeah.
I mean, I think the one argument you could make for it is if you are able to push through the challenging part, it is about communicating clearly under pressure.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, if you are with someone, whatever, you know, like the, I remember
it's like practice, it's communication practice.
Yeah. You have to do, you know, you have to make a big purchase or you have to go on vacation together for the first time or something. Like there are certain analogs in life where you won't have as much information or time and you have to overcome a challenge together and not murder each other.
Yes.
But it is not necessarily, I would say, the most relaxing thing in the world.
No, definitely not. And again, I think that this is the type of thing, though, that like you will, when you feel like your partner is not being efficient with their time,
yeah,
you'll bring with you after the game is over, right?
Like, that's true. I can end when you turn it off.
Yeah, like if I played Overcooked, right, and I'm like, oh my God, like you need to bring me these fucking pans. I'm washing all these dishes. Like, where's my burger patty, right? And next time we're in the kitchen and like my partner is in the way, I might be like, yo, remember that time in Overcooked? Don't do that. This is real life. My burger.
I know our real kitchen's going to be on fire.
Right. Like, it is funny how, like, you will have those experiences that I think in a friends group, you'll, like, laugh off and go, ha, ha, ha. But, like, for all I know, there may be an underlying actual tension that these types of experiences create.
I mean, this is like the sitcom setup of them playing charades and the couple actually hates each other.
Yep, exactly.
What else jumps out at you on this list before we talk about some of ours?
I mean, I honestly don't think many of these make great games to play with a partner. Some of them I'm not familiar with. Like Moon Hunters, I don't really know what this is all about.
Yeah. But I think something like Shovel Knight, I think, is a really interesting pick because some of these assume a certain amount of literacy that if both parties are not of equal skill, then it can become kind of a challenge.
Well, and isn't this a good way? And that's what would happen with Shovel Knight, right? Because the game gets harder, not easier, when you have a second player.
Yeah. And plus, it's just one of those games that is very traditional in that it's about timing and it's about kind of a legacy of having literacy with the platformer genre in general. And I think it actually, rather than something like a movie or something, like I think there's a reason why a movie, you know, dinner in a movie is a trope and not like a video game in a movie. It's because there's so much variability in what people may or may not be used to with a video game. Then you don't have to learn how to watch every new movie that comes out.
That's definitely true. Whereas although there are some that you really got to put in the effort.
Oh my God. Side note, finally, after it kind of memed its way around various podcasts I listened to, I watched the intro of the movie The Pest.
Oh, is that the John Leguizamo movie?
Yes, it is. Okay. And now I am perpetuating the meme by telling you this and our poor listeners. It is possibly the most annoying thing I've ever seen in my life.
Above Pauly Shore in Biodome?
It's more annoying than Pauly Shore in Biodome.
Oof, rough.
But we'll have to do a good
date night movie.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it actually unites you in hatred.
Yeah, exactly. Distract from your loathing that you've been built up over years of cohabitation.
I mean, I think this is one of the points of why we're kind of bouncing off this list is because many of these games don't give you a focal point about having a shared enemy. It's more like the other person could be letting you down or the other person has to like catch up, you know, after not playing for a while or something.
Well, yeah. And then in all seriousness, I think a lot of the games that are on this list fail in some specific ways where co-op board games have done a better job of. Like, Snipperclips is on this list. And I really enjoy Snipperclips. I think that's a really fun co-op game for the Switch. The problem is that it lends itself really quickly to quarterbacking, which I don't know if that term exists in video games, but it's a term in board games, and it's specifically co-op board games, where it lends itself towards one person who knows the solution, coaching everybody else to tell them what to do on their turns. And it's really frustrating to have experience in a board game, and there's a lot of different ways board games try to prevent that. So most co-op games, for example, when there's a risk of quarterbacking, will ask players to keep some portion of the game, usually like their hand of cards, secret from the other players, even though it's cooperative, so that it encourages communication and won't let one person sort of steal the show, right?
Yeah. And also that person can, you know, the people who have like secret cards can actually make independent choices.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Snipperclips, though, doesn't have that benefit. Like, this is especially in the puzzle games where you have to like slice yourself really well. It really naturally lends itself towards quarterbacking, where one player will tell the other, okay, now duck down, now let me snip you into shape, okay, now you do the same to me, you know, let me rotate my body. And realistically, like, if you're playing with somebody else, and I've, you know, look, I'm guilty of this, I have quarterbacked when I've been playing with kids, like trying to tell them how to rotate their paper person. And I don't want to be that type of person, but it just, I think it's the natural inclination in an experience like that, where you are relying on the other person to figure something out.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's, that's kind of the, I feel like video games are also unique in that everything is, well, maybe not every single game, but most games are inherently goal-driven. Like, there's some sort of goal.
Yep.
And depending on how, you know, depending on how seriously you take it, you know, if the point is to achieve some goal, some people are just going to naturally pursue that more aggressively than others, and that will that will cause tension.
Yes, for sure.
Which is why I think some things, like, I'm surprised that on a list like this there isn't a Telltale game on this list.
Yep, I had written that down as well. Yeah,
yeah, because it's like, it's kind of, in a weird way, it's a good synergy between your traditional, okay, let's watch a funny movie or, you know, a dramatic movie, and let's play a challenging video game. Yep. And, you know, it is very story driven, and you can actually make a collaborative decision about how you want the story to go. And it doesn't really take much hardcore gaming literacy to understand how to navigate, you know, Lee around the, you know, the screen.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of this list was meant to be like couch, you know, local couch co-op where two people are playing. But I agree with you. I think when I think of a genuinely interesting game to play with a partner, those narrative-based games, even if one person is controlling it, it's so easy to bring someone else into that experience.
Yeah.
And bringing someone else into it who isn't necessarily, you know, fast on the trigger.
Yeah.
Because you don't really have to worry about all of that. And to any Telltale game, I would add basically any like funny or silly dating game, like Hatful Boyfriend or Lovers in a Bind. Like, these are games where there's some puzzle involvement, but you can talk it out with your partner, and it's just kind of a treat to watch things go down, right? Danganronpa is another one. Like, these are like silly narrative games that set a really fun tone and are just so easy to pass a controller back and forth and just each of you sort of getting a kick out of where the story is going.
Have you ever like played an online game with a partner? You know, something that where you're not the only ones there, but there's all, you're also contending with like the, you know, the internet dynamic.
You mean where we're both playing at the same time?
Yeah, like I'm trying to think of a good example. Maybe even something like, I guess most of it would be around shooters or something. Like if you're playing like Destiny or something as a duo, but you also group up with other people, you know, like MMO style or something.
Gosh, no. I mean, I can't think of anything like that, really. Not where I would play with someone actually there.
Yeah.
I mean, other than Halo, I mean, there's been definitely times where, because in the, I guess it must have stopped at Halo 3, but maybe it was in the future Halos. Two people could future Halos. Two people could play online together. So you would, you know, group up against other players in like 2v2. Or if there's like 4v4, you could, you know, have other people join your squad and, and play with them. I mean, and those are kind of interesting for sure, because one of the benefit of those is like the version of quarterbacking in a competitive game, if you're playing with other people, is that you're just carrying, right? And that's still okay as long as the other people on your squad feel like they're contributing.
Yeah. How about some of the games that that do start off as single player, but then kind of add people ad hoc? I know we've had a lot of conversations about the new Super Mario Brothers / Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah.
And I know you have strong feelings about those.
Yes. Well, it's because I think that they're just generally garbage. Because the problem is, I mean, and again, I think this comes back to board games, because I think they just have a better way of thinking about co-op game, like co-op in particular. Mm-hmm. You never want to feel as though your role is dispensable. Mm-hmm. And when you have games like literally any Mario game that features the ability to play as a star or as Cappy or whatever, right? That's fine if you want to hand your controller to like a five-year-old and make them think that they're contributing to the game. But anybody actually familiar with these games knows that, you know, it's really not all that helpful. And to be honest, in our experience with Odyssey, it's a disservice. It becomes harder if I don't get to control Cappy.
That is true.
So it doesn't, when it feels like what my contributions to the experience is dispensable or even negative to the primary person that's playing, that's a bad experience. I'm just willingly putting it out there objectively. I think that's just a poor play experience for the other player. And that's something that I think that co-op games have gotten around by making things a little bit more class-based and making people who are even taking on different roles be able to help in like different ways, you know? And to be fair, like there's a certain liberty that you can have in board games because there's like a physical talking it out kind of experience, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm thinking here of games like Mysterium or some of the like more puzzle solvey cooperative games where, you know, you have your own task and at the end of the day your job is really important, but even when it's not your turn you can still contribute to the team's success as a whole. That I think is really important, you know, and it's something that I think games that sort of, I don't want to say phone it in, because I'm sure they think about like, well, what is the best way to add in this co-op experience, but It's not the same if at the end of the day that person participating could just as well not be there.
That's a great Valentine's Day message. This is nice, but you might as well not be here.
I mean, like, you're sitting, you know, Super Mario Odyssey and Sonic Mania are in here, but like they're basically the same thing. Like it's fine, but like look, it's Valentine's Day, right? Like I'm meant to be sitting down with my partner as equals, you know? Mm. We're a progressive couple, all right? Like I don't want to get into a scenario where like, oh, I'm the dude playing the video game and you're my like trusty gamer girl sidekick who gets to like waggle a dongle and pretend that you're participating. Like that is not interesting to me in the slightest.
I was thinking about, I don't know if Han and I ever played this together, but I was thinking about Portal 2, because it's an interesting combo of, it is action based, but it's also, there's also a pretty big component of just trying things out and, you know, logicking out what the sequence of events. But and I don't think there was a bunch of harsh you know, like death penalties. Like if you mess up
restart.
Yeah, you restart or you fall back down to the floor and then you don't even need to restart. You just have to keep trying until you go.
I 100% agree. And it doesn't fall within couch co-op, but Portal is a great example where hidden information does take place. Because oftentimes you'll be in different parts of the puzzle room, unable to see the other person, and you have to communicate what you see, like your perspective to your partner, and then both of you have to work out, like once you've shared information about what you see, have to work out how to solve that puzzle. Like that is great co-op design.
Yeah. I don't think we ever played it together, though. But I think if you have even like passable experience with what a first person game is, it's also pretty doable because it's not about twitch reactions of like, oh, I better shoot this person a millisecond before he starts firing, and you know, it is about more the exploration side.
Well, so was that not the game, what was the game that potentially like split you guys up that you were joking about?
Hana said that there were some tense moments when we were playing The Witness.
Oh, well, that's a puzzle game though, like why, where's that tension coming from?
Well, I said I didn't remember that. I also said that we should immediately delete this goddamn game, you know, we played that game. We broke the curse. We played it.
Yeah.
She was saying that there are certain, there was a certain puzzle. Maybe it was the one like in the, the color puzzle or something like that that were really difficult to do.
You know what? Okay, continue. I just have some input about, I think, how you guys did this that may explain it.
We were both playing simultaneously. Like, we were passing the controller back and forth. But I think there was just like, no, okay, now go left. Now try this again. And it's like kind of backseat driving a little bit. Yes. Not necessarily quarterbacking, but just like more of a backseat driver type mechanic. And also, there was, that game is weirdly demanding mechanically. You have to, like, every single thing in that game is very precise, so you kind of do have to walk in a certain way and like look at something at a very particular angle in order to line up the puzzle correctly. And so I think that can get a little frustrating when you know in your head what should be happening but the other person isn't doing it.
So real quick to interject, I also remember going to your house and one of you would be playing and the other of you would be writing in a book, like multiple versions of the puzzle to like try to work it out themselves. I feel like that's conducive towards, like, because you're essentially each working on your own thing and so you're not synced, you know what I mean? Like,
well, we would do a thing where, like, and that's the thing that it taught us a lot about, and this is actually very classic in general about the two of us, where like the way I approach something is very much like, I'm gonna like experiment and like figure it out. Like, I remember one time we rearranged furniture in a room and my method was like, well, I just kind of have to see it before it's right. And so I was like kind of shoving around the table a little bit and like, you know, putting the couch over here. And Hannah was like, well, yeah, but we can plan this out. And like Hannah like mapped it out on graph paper. And then hilariously, I was like, after I shoved everything around, I was like, okay, I think this is the right configuration. And she showed me her graph paper and it was the identical configuration.
Oh my God. Like, you got there, but each independently.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what also happened with The Witness, where I would be much more inclined to like jump into the puzzle, kind of fuck around with the line graph a little bit, walk around the puzzle, look at the sky for a minute, like jump back into the puzzle. And Hannah would be like, you know, cutting up graph paper into puzzle pieces.
Yeah, that's so funny.
So I think it was like very indicative of just how we approach things. But according to Hannah, there were some tense times in The Witness.
Well, I think the other problem with puzzle games generally is, and specifically puzzle games where there's like a physical component, there are times where one person might say like, oh, well, try this. And you'd go, no, I tried it. And then maybe they miss something and they'll go like, well, no, you didn't, like, you didn't do X. And
you're
like,
no,
I swear I did it. And then it's like, no, just do it, like, humor me and just redo it. And you're like, but we're wasting our time. It's already 10 minutes into this puzzle and Jason Moore is laughing at me, right? Like, there are those elements where it can lend itself towards those, like, little spats because each of you want to be as, like, efficient as possible, right? Like, that is what puzzles are all about. Like, you really want to think something through. Yeah. And if you're not thinking through it at the same time, in the same way, as you said, like, you can sort of hit a snag, you know?
Yeah.
Which is why I think something like Portal 2 really stands out, because you're each thinking about the puzzle, but you're necessarily thinking about it from your own perspective, and you have to, and it's encouraged.
That's true. It's like, that's... And also, I think that game goes a long way into just creatively thinking about how people communicate inside of a game, period. You know, like being able to paint targets on a wall, or being able to do the countdown, you know, for if you have to do something simultaneously.
Yeah.
It mechanically helps you communicate well.
Yes.
You know, like there's little nudges that help you communicate better.
Yep. So I would add to the list a game that you and I also played, and that's Octodad.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
And I'm surprised that's not on here because that is a couch co-op game. Because each of you control different tentacles. But there's something really special about Octodad that it has over Overcooked, which is, it is 100%, well, two things. One, it is 100% frivolous. Like, that is a frivolous game. And that joy, like, that the tension that you feel is, like, laughing towards the Octodad himself. Mm. You know, like, you're not... I'm not mad that, oh my God, like Scott dropped the hamburger on the way to the kitchen, right? Like, I think it's hilarious that, oops, I'm accidentally like touching my butt. Like, haha, you know what I mean? It's very like childish humor in a way. But two, on top of that, as you and I have, you know, we debriefed on Octodad, it's also a really touching story about a dad and his family.
Yeah. I was going to say that. Like, I feel like on a lot of these games we talked about, and even on the original list we started with, there's not always an actual component of a relationship or even much of a story.
Yeah.
And I think that's that makes a big difference. You know, it's kind of fun to experience a story together, which is why those Telltale things are fun, and which is why, like, Octodad is a funny game to play together.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Definitely add some, like, actual romance in there.
I'm trying to think of a game that I'm trying to think of the last game that had, like, a compelling story that we had both played together. I mean, we definitely played the Game of Thrones Telltale game together. That was pretty fun, even though we weren't extremely happy with how the story ended up.
Well, what about Her Story? Did you play that with Hannah?
No, I don't think so.
Because I did play some of that with Nicole, and I have to say, I think Her Story is an excellent couch co-op game for couples.
Remind me of the mechanic of that, though. Like, didn't you have to go back into the files and, like, look at videos or something?
So, yeah, so you watched videos, and you would have to search for them. So you would type in a specific word, and it would come up with X number of videos, but you could only ever watch, I think it's, like, the top 5 or the top 10 videos. So you might search for, say, mother and get 40 videos, but you can only watch the top 10 or 5. And so you'd have to refine your search to start unlocking more and more content.
Yeah.
But the great thing about that is it actually has a lot in common with, again, another board game that I think does co-op and couples play incredibly well, which is Sherlock Consulting Detective. Mm-hmm. And all the board game is a collection of, like, places to visit and a booklet of, like, addresses in England. And you try to solve a murder. And you're basically going to different places and, you know, talking to witnesses. And the game will have the answer at the end, but you basically just, the game is over when you decide it's over, when you've got, you know, you've learned enough about the case that you feel satisfied with being able to explain the outcome.
Right.
And when I played this board game with Nicole or another group of friends, it's really interesting because everybody comes into it with their own sort of perspective on, like, why someone would commit a murder and the connections that, like, tie these people that you meet together.
Yeah.
In much the same way that I imagine justifies why detectives work in teams, you know, like, it's not just one guy who's, like, the hard-boiled detective, right? Right. In reality, you work with somebody else because they're bringing each other's perspectives. And for a couple game, that's exactly what you want. And something like Her Story is essentially that in a video game form. Like, all you're really doing is trying to put together what this person's story is, who committed this murder, and who this person on the video footage actually is. And the game is over when you feel like you've gotten a good answer. And I think a couple could play through Her Story in one sitting and come away with it with different perspectives about the story, different thoughts and feelings about, like, why the person did what they did or didn't do what they didn't do. Like, they may have solved it, they might not have solved it. And it's equally satisfying for both parties. And that's something that's, I think, very hard to pull off in a co-op game, but would be great, I think, as a couple game.
And it also fits into that category of games where you're not explicitly competing against each other and you're not explicitly trying to surmount a physical skill-based challenge. Like, it is about uncovering a story and putting together the pieces logically so you can control for that. And I think that's probably a pretty good call.
Well, in a weird way, I think that the popularity of true crime these days is sort of tied to this, right? Like, I enjoy watching true crime shows or even, like, American Vandal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in some ways, it is kind of like a game, the way that Nicole and I will sit down and talk about the events of a show like that afterwards and theorycraft about why we think they did what or who could have done it or, like, you know, how we feel about the way the prosecutor treated it one way or another. And again, be that something as serious as, say, Serial, right? Mm-hmm. Or something as frivolous as, say, American Vandal. In both cases, you are engaged in this conversation of, like, oh man, who did it? Why did they do it? Like, this is sort of whodunit experience.
Yeah. Have you ever played a game that has basically explicitly no point? Like, I was thinking of
Nobi Boy?
Yep, I was thinking of that game specifically where they at a certain point they added multiplayer to it, and where you're just two Nobi boys wandering around the field.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that one quite a bit, as a couples game in particular, because it's all just about play. It's like getting in a sandbox and just hanging out.
And for me anyway, it has the benefit of, like, for example, I don't think we would play Minecraft together, because I would just be constantly asking, like, all right, now what's the next thing we craft? Like, how do you do this thing? How do you do X? Yeah. Like, I have such a deficit of knowledge in the crafting tree, then it would just be boring. But like, Noe Boy is just like, okay, we're going to try to just, you know, jump as high as we possibly can off of this tower for no reason other than we can do it.
That's true. How do you feel about, like, Katamari Damacy? Because they did add co-op, but it's, or not co-op, versus. But it's pretty silly.
I've never played versus.
Where you're each, like, rolling up different balls, and whoever can roll up the other player first.
You're just I do remember, you remember that.
I think you and I played it, like, way back in the day. Yeah. I mean, there's a certain type of versus game, and I don't think any of the games we've listed are versus that I think can work, and those are the ones that are really silly in the sort of Nobu Boy vein. Like Nidhogg, for example.
Yeah.
That could potentially make a good couples game.
I think Nidhogg, to me, you can, once you key into it,
you can master it.
Exactly. There's a there's definitely like a skill ceiling and skill floors in that game. And I'm sure this is the case with the game that I'm going to mention now, but I think it's less so. Gang Beasts.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like a similar thing, but it's like way more physics and stupidly, like, you know, kind of physics driven of like things randomly bouncing off and knocking you off the stage. Like, I think the silliness actually adds a lot to a couple co-op experience.
I think that would be the very first game you play. Like, if neither of you have played it, great, go for it. But once one of you sort of unlocks how to play correctly,
how to do higher level gang beast play.
I mean, you know, those games like Nidhogg, they can be really like fun and jovial one instant, and then switch into hyper competitive in like 30 seconds flat.
Are there any esports couples that are just that dominate the scene, but also are, you know, they're like, you know, the terrible husband and wife duo of Counter-Strike or something?
Like, who actually play together?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I did watch
Mr. and Mrs. Smith of Counter-Strike.
That would be amazing. No, I actually, weirdly enough, I did watch an interview with Doublelift, who's like, he's a famous League of Legends player. An interview with his girlfriend about their relationship, and it was super awkward.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
We're just like, yeah, I can only interact with them now in Twitch chat, and it's really hard when people are just spamming memes the whole time.
It's crazy. Esports is a whole nother thing, man. I don't think that's, right now it's not a good place for couples. Let's put it that way.
Esports, destroying relationships. Yeah.
What do you think about something like Spelunky?
I mean, I think that's, again, you know, you have to get used to the actual literacy part where you have to get, you know, skilled in the game.
Yeah.
But I think there is that, even like when we play it, there is that moment where sometimes you'll just run into a dark level and you'll accidentally trip down a hole and like pull the other person with you. Like, I think that sort of randomness is fun to overcome, because you are kind of fighting against something that's bigger than you. You're fighting against the game.
Yeah.
And when you do succeed, it's super satisfying, because
you
probably have worked together to succeed. Like, it's pretty hard to be successful
to not work.
Yeah.
And then I would say, on top of it, there's enough luck and randomness to it where even if you're really good at Spelunky, I mean, unless you're the best, right? Like me, you will die and have to rely on your teammate to go find you anyway. So that, like, at least you're taking turns sort of quarterbacking. Or the way that, you know, I can't give you my bombs. If I happen to get more bombs, I have to be the one to be the bomber in that scenario. Mm-hmm. And so it does build up this sort of mutual reliance on one another in a way that I think a lot of co-op games overlook.
Yeah. So what we're saying is, Spelunky is the perfect video game.
Once again, Spelunky is the game.
All things come back to Spelunky. Together.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not playing Spelunky, is grounds for divorce, I understand.
That's true. You have to have Spelunky. That's part of our vows, actually.
Yeah.
The secret part of the vows.
So of all of the games that we mentioned, is there one that would stand out that you think is the best co-op game?
Gosh, as boring as it sounds, I think it is. I think it has to be, like, all right, like, we're gonna play The Walking Dead, you know, season one or something. Because I just really think that there's a combination of tense, you know, time-based moments, but also just having a discussion about like, oh, I really liked what this character did, or I didn't trust this person and why. And you just learn a lot about people. Like, there's, you could easily play the same game and look at the same scene and have a completely different reaction as to what Lee was doing, whether it was right or wrong. Yeah. And you have the bonus of actually playing through a thing and making dynamic decisions. Like, it's just hard to, I don't know, it's hard to beat something like that, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. The one thing I would say is something like Had a Full Boyfriend, where you're trying to date pigeons, at least there's some romance involved, you know?
that's true. I guess, yeah, the overall games are not super, like, you know, I don't feel like there's a huge number of mainstream games anyway that are specifically about romance, but yeah, it's more like mechanically speaking, like, what do they do?
So speaking of which, I know I've already been on the pro board game bandwagon this episode, but there's specifically a board game that's all about having and maintaining a relationship with your partner. And it's like pseudo cooperative, and you each decide like what made you fall in love with them, and maybe it was like their hairy armpits and stuff. It's pretty great.
I know, I've heard of this game. I've never played it. I forget the name of it though.
Yeah, I forget what it's called, but I think it came out this year. I played it at Gen Con last year, and it is up there as like a really interesting concept.
I think the last board game that Hannah and I played together was the Star Trek Scene It DVD interactive board game.
You just sat there and watched the DVD? This is like
play against each other.
Oh, it's versus. Okay.
Yeah. It's like it's a board game where you're traveling around the board, but the traveling is based off of dice rolls and correct answering of trivia questions.
Man, the age of like board games that came with DVDs.
Yeah,
that
it's basically, yeah. I think about like what Sam will think of it, and it'll just be like us seeing like a Victrola playing or something like that.
I still wish I had a copy of Dragon Quest as a kid that comes with a VHS. And part of the VHS is like, turn away, young wizard. This is only for the dungeon master.
Yes.
And it was like, this is the fucking coolest thing ever.
Maybe that's what we'll do for Valentine's Day, just bust out the Star Trek Scene It.
There you go. Yeah, let me know how that goes.
All right. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our love bungalow. Come on by.
Bring this podcast's a rockin', don't come a knockin'.
Bring you and exactly one other or multiple people, if you want to have a polyamorous relationship on our podcast, more the welcome.
Yeah, just as long as you all download it.
As long as you download it, give it a listen, share it with your friends, give us a review, and let us know. Send us an email. We've had some great emails of late, so keep those coming, especially if there's a couples game that you really enjoy. And actually, if there's a story that you have about like playing with a couple and having it really work or really not work, those are the ones that I want to hear.
Yes. Cool. All right, everyone. Until next time, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Happy Valentine's Day. Every time we